Welcome to Wellness Radio with Dr. Jeanette Gallagher as your host. Her show discusses topics of health, wellness, and spirituality and is about discovering your place in this great universe from your cells to the cosmos. Along with her guest, in casual conversation, she strives to ask the difficult questions that may be holding you back from a vibrant life and shares new ideas that may inspire you to make a change in your life that you only can see in your dreams. And now, here is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Wellness Radio. This is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher, and it's a pleasure to have you with us here this evening. Tonight, we are going to take a little bit of a diversion trip, and we'll say, what are we going to be talking about? We're talking about how we grew up in the 70s and 80s, what that highway kind of had, what the exits we took off of it, and hey, so what if it was a dead end? It was definitely an interesting experience. What are we talking about today? Is how we've lived our lives over many decades, and in reflection, we say, wow, I didn't even know I went through that. I didn't realize I had such a great story. And oh, do you mean now? In the year 2019, I can start unpacking all of my secrets, take those chains off my ankles, and be able to speak freely about how my life truly did play out. My guest today is Dr. Barbara Roberts. Her book is A Mafia Love Story, The Dr. Broad. Dr. Barbara, thank you so much for joining us today. It's a pleasure to have you with us.
Dr. Jeanette, thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to talk about my book. My book has had a long gestation, which we can talk about, but I think it tells an interesting story about a world that has now vanished, and that is the world that I grew up with, and I'm a bit older than you because I was born in the closing days of World War II. And the world then was a very different place, particularly for women. For example, medical school classes had quotas, and no medical school class had more than 10% women. Law schools were not very friendly to women. Women were absent from the boardroom. Women were absent from professional sports except for tennis and golf. It was a very, very different world.
Oh, it sure was. You know, I can remember being sent to be a dental hygienist because you couldn't be a dentist. You weren't smart enough. You weren't a man.
Right.
You weren't this. We weren't rich enough to send you to that school, you know, or whatever.
Sure.
And I think the ideas that you and I both grew up in are so revolutionizing. When you talk to them, your kids or your grandkids about them, they're going, I don't even know what you're talking about. That it doesn't even resonate with them because they don't have a frame of reference. Don't you think that the world has really taken not just a turn for a different way of living, it's gone 360, don't you think?
It has, Dr. Jeanette, but I'm a little concerned about what's going on now because I see a move to put women back in their place, to strip them of certain rights. And it's very concerning to me because we worked hard to win the rights that we have now, and I would hate to see them overturned.
And even the ideas, too, of about how you grew up in your family existence, you know, with abuse and different things like that, we look back on those and we say, is the family life really unleashed? Are we more transparent in the way we raise our kids or what's going on in the four walls of our house? And I would say we're keeping more secrets than ever, don't you think?
I would not be at all surprised. You know, I grew up in a family that was rife with alcoholism, and there's always a lot of secrecy in alcoholic families. But nowadays, at least, there are organizations that offer help to people who are in alcoholic families that really either didn't exist or I didn't know about when I was a child growing up with an alcoholic father. But when I was an adult, I found a lot of help with organizations like Adult Children of Alcoholics and Al-Anon.
Well, because then it really truly was about if you ever spoke out about a secret, pretty much your life was at risk. It could be the neighbors. It could be from the inner family. I mean, I grew up with alcoholism in every single generation on back, almost 90% of the relatives. and both sides of the family. And it truly, you know, you just never spoke about it at all. And you know the old scenario, you get dressed up and put outside and to look perfection, and whatever happened inside of our walls was no one's business. And I think truly that takes us right along. Your story, A Mafia Love Story, is truly about, again, keeping secrets, again, going along that little shaded line as we would speak of life. Don't you think sometimes that once we kind of know how to keep secrets or know about those things, our life can kind of just seem normal when we get in these other tenuous places?
That's correct. You know, my story, my book, The Doctor Brought, A Mafia Love Story, not only recounts the very four action-packed years when I was the cardiologist for the head of New England Mafia, but also talks about my upbringing, as I said, in an alcoholic, very devout Catholic family. I mean, I was raised to be a saint and preferably a martyr. The years, the most important influence in my life was the Catholic Church. Now, I parted company with the Catholic Church many years ago over the issue of birth control because my mother had 10 children in 10 years. I wanted to have a life as different from hers as it was possible to get. And my father worshipped priests and doctors. And I knew I didn't have a prayer of becoming a priest, so I decided to become a doctor at a time when that was almost unheard of for women, particularly someone coming from a poor family where I knew I would have to win scholarships to college and medical school.
Mm-hmm.
But that's what I did, and deciding to become a doctor was one of the few wise decisions I made as a young woman.
Don't you think, though, Dr. Barbara, that a long time ago in those decades, that was very commonplace for what you and I are talking about, is that the way women were raised and different things like that. In other words, it just was the way it was. In other words, people nowadays will say, but you have choices. You can make different things. You can do this, that. There's so many potentials out there. Look at all the services. And we're going, what the heck are you talking about? Back then there wasn't. Right?
Yeah. You had, at least in my family, your choice was you either got married and had a baby every year until you hit menopause, or you became a nun. Those are the only two sanctioned choices for women in my family.
Yeah, and I mean, I can remember, you know, playing the organ at the Catholic Church, you know. I was only in fourth grade, and I was playing this pipe organ, singing a Latin mass with the priest, you know, 12, 15 masses a week. And I'm going, what the heck? You know, I grew up like that. So, and I think we kind of thought that that was normal, whereas now we would say, is there a church? What does the break from the church actually mean? And how are you letting religion really control you? Back then, it, you know, there everybody was the same. Everybody was in this same cog in the wheel, so to speak. And kind of it was very, that was where you were. So the church was part of that cog, yes?
Right. I mean, my father's favorite expression was rally around your priests blindly. I went to Catholic school, and we were taught that the 13th century was the zenith of civilization, and everything since then had been downhill. I mean, it was a totally out there worldview, but that's all I knew as a child. And, you know, it wasn't until many years later when I became educated that I realized that in many ways I had been sold a bill of goods.
It's almost like we kind of are chronologically sharing our stories along the social things that came along, like television came out. Then we learned that, oh, hey, look at that college. It's on TV. You remember Kent College and all when they were speaking out and stuff. And we go, oh, wow, I didn't know people could speak out. Oh, wow, look at that. It's a woman on TV, you know. Until that point, those relationships weren't there. I mean, I can remember my father coming home screaming and cursing because there was so much traffic on the highway, and he says, what's going on? And I can remember my mother saying that it was Woodstock, you know. We only lived down the road from there. And it was like, it's just these things that went along at that time were like really almost like bursting forth, you know. In other words, wow, there's another idea. And what you truly did in your life was, wow, there's another idea, and you kind of like got sucked into joining into that because you were just ready to go, yes?
Yes, I was ready to go, and I felt very strongly about the movements I was involved in. I mean, I was I became an anti-war activist while I was a resident at Yale New Haven Hospital in the early 70s, and I became a conscious feminist when I was at the was at Yale as a resident in the early 70s. And I actually spoke at the last mass anti-Vietnam War demonstration on the grounds of the Washington Monument the day of Nixon's inauguration in 1973.
Wow.
I spoke at many other anti-war demonstrations. I spoke at one in New York City, and I'm on the speaker's platform, and I look to my right, and who's standing next to me but John Lennon and Yoko Ono?
Mm-hmm.
It was an amazing experience. And I also became active in the pro-choice movement and spoke at many pro-choice demonstrations. So I felt very strongly about these issues because even though I had left the Catholic Church behind, I still felt and feel today that I'm a very moral person. And I try to do what I believe to be right, even if there's a personal cost to it. As there was a personal cost to my going to bat for my patient, who was
right.
the mafia chieftain. And that caused a whole ton of bricks of controversy and disapproval to descend on my head. At a time, you know, when I was a single mother with three young children, so they suffered also.
Do you think that potentially you kind of just had your life plan and you were going to speak up and, you know, be heard and be a position in the world and be darned of all the other, like, restrictions that came up? In other words, you kept just busting through all of those walls saying, that's not me, here I go, and you went through it, like with the church. Then with, you know, with helping with your patient, it didn't matter what the label was of the mafia. It didn't matter what the label was of crime or whatever it might be. You just were going
right.
to do the patient. So in other words,
right.
you had morals that you were working with versus
yes.
the society kind of set up.
You know, I took a Hippocratic oath to put my patients' interest ahead of my own, not just patients who didn't have a criminal record or not just patients who were facing felony
right.
charges, but any patient I took under my care. I took an oath to put their interests ahead of mine, and I took that oath very, very seriously. And I paid a price, but in my opinion, had I to do it all over again, I would do exactly the same thing.
Yeah, because it's truly about your core soul. You know what I mean? In other words, what is the point if you're going around doing what's socially acceptable or what's socially okay or socially safe? In other words, you didn't take a life that was safe. You took a life that was honorable, that was what you were about, yes?
Well, I hope so. I hope I did. I believe I did. And I survived. I mean, ultimately, my book is a story of survival. And I hope it helps other people to survive their traumas, and it helps other people to make difficult choices when they know in their heart of hearts that they're doing the right thing. And of course, as with any author, I hope my book entertains people.
Yeah, and it's truly about how can we let go of the shackles of our secrets. And I think that's truly true now. I see a lot of women over the age of 50, probably I could say a great percentage of the radio shows I've been seeing coming down in the last year and a half have been women over 50 who are starting to say that I'm done with all that, you know, get out of my way, I have something to say, almost
right.
as, you know, it's almost like I've just got to get it out of me, and they just start putting it down and speaking out. And I think
right.
kind of we would have liked to have said that we would hope our stories would help the future. However, I think it's truly about just worrying about caring for self and helping those that may be in your immediate circle that might need some help. Because,
right.
you know, it's not about helping, you know, future generations that are not interested anyway, but you might help, you know, a group of elder women who are saying, wow, thank goodness, now I can share with everybody at the coffee shop, you know, and be able to
right.
say what's going on. And that's truly letting people's souls be able to speak, yes?
Yeah, I agree.
It's a real tough thing to be when we think about that men were really the umbrella in which society lived under, you know.
Yeah.
However, that's truly how we saw it then, I think, don't you?
Yes, and, you know, it led to a lot of needless suffering. I mean, just in the field of medicine, everything was studied with the male being the prototypical patient. But, you know, women are not just small men. And for many years, women were not allowed to take part in clinical trials. So it was only in the last decade or two that we came to the realization that women may have different symptoms than men when they have the same disease. Women may react differently to medication than men when they have the same disease. Women may react differently to interventions than men when they have the same disease. So it was totally unscientific to just take results obtained in men and apply them willy-nilly to women. So these are the kinds of things that happen as an unlooked-for side effect of very pervasive sexism that existed and still exists to this day in patriarchal society. And we do live in a patriarchal society. There's no country on earth that isn't a patriarchal society.
Right, and it's really profound, I think, these days, you know. I had someone say to me one day, and it was just recently, too, and they said, you know, you just need to be quiet. And I went, what? And it was like I was so thrown back, you could have pushed me into a chair with a feather, you know. It was like, and I just kind of said, you know what, that is so, wherever you're coming from, how could you still be coming from that aspect?
Right.
And it was a male.
Silence only helps the oppressor. It never helps those who are oppressed.
Yeah. I guess sometimes we say, and I'm sure you've heard it many times, is that, well, he's just like his father. They're just like their mother. They're just like their grandmother. You know, that old thing. You're repeating of all of the generations, don't you think? And now we're saying, can we ever break of that, or are we just a collection of all of their good, bad, or ugly habits? Yes?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, to get back to something, an issue you raised earlier, I think that women, particularly women over the age of 50, are really finding their voice. And I think part of it has to do with the fact that, at least I know when I went through menopause, I suddenly had this burst of energy.
Yes.
That was like amazing. I could accomplish so much in 24 hours, far more than I could when I was in my 20s or 30s. So I think that plays into it. There is something liberating about becoming transiting out of your reproductive years. I like to say, only half kiddingly, that for most women, certainly for me, my reproductive years were a prolonged siege of temporary insanity.
Yeah.
I did things that were totally insane. Luckily, I survived.
Right.
But I think getting out of the reproductive years allows women to think much more clearly about many issues.
Because it also, too, takes away the aspect, like you've said before, about having children all the time and having that over your head. It's almost like a constant kind of boomerang, you know, that's over your head all the time. And when you're finally free of that and saying, oh, you mean now I can live and be free of any other things that maybe I had thought about in life, is that I didn't need to have 100 kids, you know,
right.
and it wasn't important to me, but I can get up today and not worry about it, really, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Although I always say motherhood is a life sentence, and no matter how old they get, you still worry about them.
Yes, yes. And I'm sure we all do. We both do. I was just texting mine this morning. Yes.
Yeah.
And also, too, Dr. Roberts, don't you think that that going back a second on the idea of secrets, do you think that sometimes I think people who have come from very traumatic childhoods like you and I have, we could say that the idea of secrets, we kind of don't even notice the label on them anymore as we went through life. It's sort of like it became a commonplace type thing that you did, but we really didn't see the gravity of it. Do you know what I'm saying?
Right. We didn't see the damage it was doing. know, we internalize so much of that trauma instead of, you know, trying to work it through verbally and emotionally with either a trusted advisor or a trusted adult or a counselor.
It's sort of like the idea of having a gun around you. Yes, so what? It's okay if we had a machine gun under the bed. It was okay if we went out and did this or that. It's okay that we didn't show up and see other people. It's okay that, do you know what I mean? And those to normal people would say, this is a serious problem. And we're going, yeah, whatever, you know, it's just what I did, you know?
Yes, I agree.
I think,
but, you know, part of the reason why it took me so long to write my story was, you know, that I was still in full-time practice until 3 years ago. And I just thought it would be too distracting to have, for example, particularly a new patient sitting across from me, knowing all these details of my lurid past when I was trying to get at the bottom of what, you know, what the cardiac issue was that the patient was coming to me for. But once I retired from clinical practice, although I still teach part-time at Brown University's medical school, once I retired from clinical practice, it became more and more imperative to me to tell my story. And then a couple of years ago, I was approached by a friend of mine who was the ex-wife of Providence, Rhode Island's notorious mayor, Buddy Cianci. And she had been approached by two Emmy award-winning writers and producers by the name of Mark Smerling and Zach Stewart Pontier. And they were putting together a new podcast called Crime Town. And in the first season of Crime Town, they decided to examine the intersection of politics and the mafia in Rhode Island. And they really wanted to interview Sheila Bentley, my friend who was Buddy's ex-wife. And she declined because, you know, she had young grandchildren who were from that marriage. But she told me you really should interview Barbara Roberts because she was Raymond Patriarca. That was the name of the crime boss. She was his cardiologist. And so they came to interview me, and I spoke publicly for the first time about my years as the doctor to the head of the Mingo Mafia and about my clandestine affair with another mafia at the same time. And that podcast went on to be an international hit. It was downloaded over 550 million times.
Wow.
And my episode 11, came out in March of 2017, and in the first 24 hours, that was downloaded more than 400,000 times around the world. So this sort of gave a boost to my chances of being published, because as I'm sure you know, it's difficult to get published, although this will be my fourth published book, because there was an agent by the name of Esmond Harmsworth at Avitas Creative Management, and he was a big Crime Town fan. And when he heard through a mutual friend that I had written a memoir, he got in touch with me and became my agent. And as you may know, the hardest part of getting a book published is finding an agent.
Right.
But my other three books were all about medical topics, but directed at a lay audience. So my book prior to The Dr. Broad was called The Truth About Statins, and that was published by Simon & Schuster in 2012. Because statins are, in my opinion, and I'm a heretic, obviously, very dangerous medications who don't do what they're cracked up to do.
Well, also, too, Dr. Roberts, don't you think that by you speaking out about your experiences with the mafia and about with your experiences in your life, isn't that really, you're providing almost, well, we'll say it this way, you're providing a type of service so that you're able to say, this is how I lived my life. But now those people who were affiliated also in that circle will be able to look to you for help or be able to look to you as you've been able to share your story. And that kind of helps release them also. So in a way, it's providing you service because you're there and you're being open and you're shining a light on yourself, which, you know, we say, we want to look up to all of these heroes and everything. Well, you know, the heroes don't have a real life story that you can equate with sometimes, so you need to find someone else. And so you definitely have a position in which people can relate to you, yes?
I hope so. I think that it, you know, whenever you're reading a book, particularly if it's a memoir, that it's important that you feel a relationship with the person, that what they're talking about is not totally foreign to you. But, I mean, there are so many experiences I had that are common to so many women, you know,
right.
Growing up in an alcoholic family, marriage at a young age, having children at a young age, getting divorced at a young age, having custody battles with both fathers of my children, you know,
right.
Becoming a professional, trying to break into a male-dominated profession, being discriminated against as a woman in so many aspects of both my personal and professional lives. These are all things that I think particularly women will be able to relate to.
And I think it's really, really important because sometimes people will say that I look back on my life with shame or guilt. You know, I work so much with end-of-life clients and they say, oh, but I have so much I want to talk about and, you know, I'm just going to take it to my grave with me. I'm not going to share it. I'm not going to open up. And we think, who does that really help? You know what I mean?
No.
You know, is there anyone out there who will listen? And that's what I do, you know, as an advocate, I just listen. Because I think sometimes it just eases them on, you know. You know how people are so much...
Exactly.
I'm sure you see this, you know, in heart... being a heart doctor, is that people just don't want to die. They don't want to die because they're so much shame and guilt that they know that God's going to judge them on the other side, so they try to keep themselves here, you know? You know,
right,
they
right.
don't want to go through that proverbial door. And I think sometimes... when your book like this, I mean, when you share your story, it's sort of like saying, hey, dude, you know, it's no big deal. I promise you. I've been there. I've done these things.
Right.
Don't you think?
I want to make two comments about what you just said because it was profound. I used to tell my patients constantly, guilt is a waste of emotion.
Yeah.
Don't waste your emotions on guilt. If something is bothering you, then fix it. Don't just go around feeling guilty. And the other thing that I try to teach my medical students and the interns and residents is the most important thing you can do for your patients is listen.
Yes.
You have to listen. And you have to listen intently, and you have to listen with an open heart and an open mind. Because listening tells the patient that you care about him or her. And particularly in specialties like cardiology, where you're often having to have a patient make profound changes in their lifestyle, patients aren't going to change their lifestyles in a way that's often very difficult to do unless they feel that you care about them. And if they're convinced that you care about them, they will want to please you. They will want to follow your advice.
Yes.
But that arises from listening.
And also, too, I think the idea that what you really did in your life is, you know, about going through your soul path, irregardless of the labels. When you're listening to people, you also want to hear them, irregardless of the labels. So it's not about their stories all the time. It's about what can you hear behind the story. And that's really what you share in the core of your book, The Dr. Broad, is really, you know, where is the golden thread through your story? And it's you. You know what I mean? You and your soul where you are today. You know, all of this other is just the highway that you went down, yes?
Yes. But speaking of the book, I it's kind of an amusing story where the title came from, The Dr. Broad. And shortly after I moved to Rhode Island in 1977, I briefly dated an Italian-American who had relatives who were, you know, mob-affiliated.
Right.
And we remained friends after we stopped dating. And after I became Raymond's physician, I was, you know, in the newspapers constantly. And he called me one day and he said, I have to tell you something funny. He said, remember my friend so-and-so? And I said, yes. He said, he called me today and he said, hey, Vinny, remember that Dr. Broad you used to date? She's the old man's doctor now.
Yeah.
Because I used to call Raymond the old man. And I thought that was hilarious because to me, abroad was a woman with large breasts and a small brain, and I had just the opposite. At least I'm sure about not having large breasts.
Yeah.
And it seemed to me that that would be a perfect title for my memoir when I came to write it.
Absolutely. You know, I can remember that word all the time. Boy, it used to be just so common, didn't it? You know, because...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I in our area, there were a lot of Italians, and they used that word so constantly, you know, and it was, it was just interesting. Really cool. Well, I think Dr. Roberts said also, too, your story is truly, don't you think it's where can you find love of self or love of others in a way that... it just seems it's not like outward kind of romantic, kind of all that love like that you see on the drama on TV. It's truly about love of life that you've really shared in your book. You know, I mean, like if you had to find love of self, then you had love of your family, then you had love of, you know, the lovers that you had or the people that crossed your path. But it's truly about that moment of connecting love. It's not that superfluous kind of, you know what I mean? Stuff like on TV, you know?
Right. You know, love is active. Love is not passive. Love, again, is putting someone else's interests ahead of your own. Love is trying to help yourself and your loved one be the best person they can be and to develop the human potential to the utmost and to lower their suffering, because there's no such thing as a life without suffering. We all suffer. And some of us suffer more than others, but if you love someone, you try to mitigate their suffering.
Yeah, and it's really that you were able to keep that in mind. Do you know what I'm saying? In other words, that was in forefront. It wasn't, hey, I'm going to get in trouble. Hey, I'm going to make some money on this. Or, hey, I'll be in the newspaper kind of idea, which we all know that went on those decades. But you kind of took it the other way and just, you know, you just had to shut your mind off from all of that. Yes?
Right. Yeah. I had to concentrate on the task at hand and let the distractions fall by the wayside.
And in closing, do you think, Dr. Barbara, as you said, that you'd do it all over again? Do you think that, I think in this decade, we probably wouldn't even see the players even show up. But if we looked back and we said, let's go back to those years and see if we would change anything, probably we wouldn't. Would you?
I certainly wouldn't change the decisions I made at that time with regard to becoming Raymond's doctor, or for that matter, you know, becoming Lewis's lover. I grew tremendously as a human being through my experiences with both those men. And even though ultimately I suffered a lot of heartbreak, I became stronger and I became a better person.
Yeah, because I think without it, sometimes we would say, would we want to be the closed, you know, recessive kind of women these days in our elder years? And we're saying, no way, right?
That's correct. No way.
Yeah, no way. It's sort of
never
like,
again.
Yeah. And it's, I mean, you think about it, it's sort of like once you've cracked open the box of secrets, it's sort of like throw away the key. You just can't go back there again. It's sort of like, why would you? You could almost feel the pressure on your chest. You almost feel your heart sinking when all that weight is on. And once you let it off, it's sort of like, why would you want to go back to that, right?
Right. Exactly.
Well, Dr. Barbara, could you share with the listeners how to find out more information about your work? That would be wonderful.
Yes, I have a website for the book. It's called thedrbroad.com. There's also a Facebook page called The Dr. Broad. And I post on both of those with a fair amount of frequency. I will be posting where I'll be appearing on the book tour, because once the book is out, I'll be doing an extensive book tour.
Cool. Well, it was such a pleasure to have you with us here today, and I hope we've kind of given people an idea that no matter what's gone on in your past, no matter what kind of stories you have, just let them go. You know, write them down, share them, put them, write your own little book, stick it in the back of your desk, and, you know, at least you got your voice out. Yes?
Yes, and thank you so much for having me, Dr. Jeanette. I really appreciate the opportunity to talk with you.
Oh, you're
and
so
your
welcome.
Audience.
Well, thank you so much for joining us today.
You're welcome.
If you'd like to find out more information about Dr. Barbara Roberts, again, her book is The Dr. Broad, A Mafia Love Story. Please do click on the link on the bottom of today's show page and you go directly to her website. As she has shared, she does post there randomly. There'll be a Facebook page where you'll be able to interact with her more frequently, and definitely do check out her story. And as we've said, it truly is, no matter what your story is, no matter how devastating it's been, no matter how easy it's been, maybe challenging or maybe feeling like there's a lot of shame or guilt, you certainly don't need to carry that baggage that much longer. Take out a piece of paper, start writing things down, set them to the side. If you have to, you can burn it, you can share it, you can publish it. Whatever you'd like. And truly, it's really all about your story. Thank you so much for joining us today. This is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher. Until tomorrow, have a great day.
Today we discussed many life-changing concepts. Who do you turn to and how do you know what is best when faced with a health crisis? Dr. Jeanette is a patient advocate. She listens to the patient, the doctors, and the family, clarifies the health issues and concerns, then helps the patient make the best choices going forward. If you would like help implementing change into your life and health, we can talk and see where you are stuck and how to improve the quality of your life. Check the link on the bottom of today's show page or visit drjeanettegallagher.com to schedule a phone appointment today.